Hello and a very warm welcome to the Sound of Economics Bruegel's podcast. My name is Guntram Wolf and I'm the director of Bruegel, and I'm pleased to be joined today by Katalin Cech, who is a member of the European Parliament and the vice chair of the Renew Europe group, and she is a Hungarian MEP and has been very vocal on issues such as rule of law, transparency, the Magnitsky Act, but also transparency when it comes to vaccine contracts. And in today's conversation, we really want to talk about these issues. It's a continuation of previous talks we've had here in this podcast with other MEPs from the EPP group, from the Social Democratic group, and also from the Greens. And so it's a real pleasure to have now, I think the second time from Renew Europe, Luis Garicano was already a guest some time ago as well. And it's really a pleasure to have you, Katalin, and to discuss with you some of the pressing issues that are on your mind as a member of the European Parliament at the moment. So let's perhaps start with the global picture, Katalin. Many things happening, but one big issue that is discussed a lot in Europe is the so-called Magnitsky Act, a foreign policy tool to intervene and to impose sanctions for human rights violations. Can you just address this issue and tell to our audience, our listeners, explain what is the Magnitsky Act? I'm not sure everybody actually knows in our audience. And then also give us a sense of what is the political debate around the Magnitsky Act at the moment, and where do you stand on that debate?
Thank you very much, Guntram, and thank you very much for having me on the podcast. And indeed, you raised some of the issues that might be the most pressing ones that have been going on in this parliament for the last couple of years. And I would love to share my perspective, of course. So starting with the Magnitsky Act, I think this is really goes to the core of a great problem we are having here in the EU. And this is the case of power, basically, that we have nice ideas and we have nice principles, and we even make very public statements about certain cases that are not in line with what we as the EU would regard as something that is a good way of doing policy or governing countries elsewhere in the world. However, right now we have very, very limited means to actually stand up for these values and try to influence how other leaders treat their people, or how companies, including European companies, treat their workers all around the world. And we all know that without effective tools and the power of enforcement, well, these words just remain nice statements. Or rather to say deeply worried statements about something that is dear to us, but we cannot really do anything about. And this is why I've been fighting for the European Magnitsky Act alongside many of my colleagues from Renew Europe in order to make it possible for the European Union to sanction people, leaders from other countries from outside the EU who have been found guilty of violations of human rights or crimes that affect a great part of their population. Because I find it very incredible that certain leaders can just go around for a shopping tour in Paris or Milan and in the same time committing violations against their own people, basically day by day. And that's why I welcome the installation of this tool. And I'm just very much looking forward for a more assertive use of it in our foreign policy.
Can you explain what this really means in practice? I mean, I think everybody probably agrees that it's nice to have action following words and not just leave empty statements standing there. But what does it mean in practice? Are you suggesting that leaders from parts of China, for example, where the detention camps for the Uyghurs are based, that those leaders should face financial sanctions or even not be allowed to travel? Or what exactly do you have in mind? And how could that actually be enforced? And who would take that decision at the end of the day? I mean, who has the power to take that decision in Europe?
Yes, basically last December, the European Union passed the European Magnitsky Act, which is a modification of the US Magnitsky Act that has been in power for many years. And basically, this act allows the EU to freeze the assets and impose travel bans on individuals who are involved in serious human rights abuses. And there are a lot of criteria for these sanctions: genocide, crimes against humanity, slavery, arbitrary arrest, detentions. And these individuals that were found guilty in such heinous acts, they can be put under sanctions by the European Union. And the decision is eventually taken by the European Council.
So it requires unanimity in the European Council?
Yes, the European Council needs to make the final word of it. And we already seen that it's quite problematic because of the unanimity rule, which I think I'm not alone with the idea that we regard it as quite a serious obstacle for the EU to make quicker and more assertive actions in the area of foreign policy. But still, I believe that this act is a huge step in the right direction. Even though we already witnessed certain countries, such as my country, Hungary, exercising political pressure against sanctioning certain individuals, which probably will create problems on the long run as well. But still, we have this tool after so many years, and I believe we have to be ready to use it. But the other thing you mentioned about the Uyghur situation in China, and it raises the question of another huge debate around our trade policy, for instance. And we can't really raise the question whether we in the European Union are purely regard ourselves as a community of trade, or do we want to involve our values also in trade? And unfortunately, when we look at our trade deals, very often we just cannot enforce certain human rights clauses that are implicated in the trade deals that we sign with countries. And this is particularly worrying in the face of the new CAI agreement, which really raises huge question marks around China's practices, around the Uyghur human rights situation.
So you are against signing the Chinese EU investment agreement, even though, of course, the Commission emphasizes that it's a significant step forward in terms of labor rights compared to not signing the deal. I mean, we are not going to change China completely, but isn't it a step in the right direction?
I still have very big question marks in my head. And when the Commission mentions that labor rights could be significantly improved as a result, well, good, but then I would like to see China sign up for the ILO standards before this deal gets passed. And also, I haven't heard by any of the officials speaking about this agreement any serious confirmation about the Uyghur situation being addressed. And frankly, I would not be comfortable of products that are created by forced labor or by people in internment camps, these products to enter the European market. I think we have to exercise certain standards, human rights standards also, in our trading practices. And yes, China is an important partner, but we should not sign any agreement that does not comply with our human rights standards. And I have very big question marks about the CAI.
Okay. Let's move from the foreign policy front to more the European discussions and issues in Europe. And you've been very vocal on really two points. One is the vaccine transparency, and the other one is transparency and good governance when it comes to EU funds. So perhaps you can just give a sense to our listeners. Of course, you are from the opposition party in Hungary, not from Viktor Orban's party. But if you can give us a sense of where you see the mechanisms that have been put in place, such as the rule of law mechanism, currently, where do you think they will be effective measures of ensuring that EU money, which will be very substantial, that will go to many countries in Central and Eastern Europe and will be actually amount to substantial percentages of GDP of the respective countries, both in the East and in the South of Europe. Will the control mechanisms to ensure that this money goes to where it's supposed to go to, are these control mechanisms sufficient? And if not, what do you think should happen?
Let's just put it straight. The EU is administering a never-before-seen amount of money to member states, both in the multi-annual financial framework and also both in the immediate coronavirus relief package, the Recovery and Resilience Facility, altogether is 1.7 trillion euros. It is really a huge amount, and the amount of money that is basically a product of European cooperation. So we've faced challenges over the past years about misuse and fraud and mismanagement around the EU's financing and inadequate controlling capacities. And these problems will get bigger and bigger if we do not do something, because this money is at stake, and both the beneficiary countries and both the countries who actually pay in the money, they are very much looking to this process. Where this money goes, who gets it, what are the end results? So this is why I believe it is so important to condition these monies on a well-governed financial framework, that every country that distributes this money has to make sure that every single euro cent of it goes to crisis relief. And we have to develop European tools to stop the practice of mismanagement, fraud, the distribution of this money for the inner circles of certain governments, friends and families, and oligarchs loyal to power. Because unfortunately, this has been the case for many, many years. And the EU, up until now, has unfortunately proven to be quite ineffective in controlling these kind of practices. If I just give you an example, the son-in-law of Viktor Orban just received 600,000 euros for an agricultural business. And a few years ago, his company was found guilty of fraud by Olaf, the European Anti-Fraud Office, in a mega project involving a lot of EU money in a streetlight construction project. So I suppose we all raise the question of how it could happen. Why we cannot blacklist individuals who corrupted fraud, and why cannot we actually have a more general framework in place to stop the systemic abuse around the money that we witness in many countries? And this is why I think it's a very big step forward to have the rule of law conditionality mechanism, but this mechanism has to be used. And right now, unfortunately, I fear that the Commission is not doing its work. According to the regulation that we negotiated, the regulation should be in place starting January 1st. And a lot of member states, including Hungary, but also Poland, they play on delaying this with a court case. And this is why we want to put pressure on the Commission to start to use this regulation as soon as possible, and also use other methods in its power to stop fraud and corruption and restore trust and ensure good governance of these funds.
But how can the EU start it if the regulation hasn't been passed? What can be done to accelerate using that regulation? And I mean, I quite agree with you that it's a sort of a significant step forward compared to what used to be the case, where the problem of EU money being misspent is not a new problem, right? I think it's a problem that those in Brussels that have been looking into these numbers for some years have known for a long time. And unfortunately, it really covers, I mean, it's not linked to just one country, it's many, many countries. It's big corruption, it's small corruption, it's also major political lobbying around the common agricultural policy, for example, where certainly the spending criteria are tilted towards specific types of spending, thanks to intensive lobbying efforts. So there is a big issue indeed with EU money, and I think most people agree. And now there's this new mechanism. But, you know, how to accelerate it really, and what is the pressure the European Parliament can exercise on the Commission? And perhaps you can say also a word, might that change now that Fidesz is not part of the EPP group anymore? Is that changing the political dynamics in the European Commission on this issue?
Well, that's a very good question. I hope yes, because I have this feeling that the EPP members, the EPP heads of states, even though they were very strong in their rhetorics, but still they have been shielding Mr. Orban from responsibility for quite a lot of years. We have to see how it changes with their departure. But it's very clear that the Commission is responsible of putting a case forward, and the Parliament has powers, according to the treaties, to raise a case for a failure of action against the Commission in case necessary guarantees are not met, that the Commission is actually working. And we hope to pass this in a resolution next week, because right now, all the Commission has to do is to apply the law. And no council conclusion can change the law. The law says that the regulation is in power starting January 1st. And we have to make clear that even though the council conclusion has put some muddy language in about court cases, and yes, maybe we should wait until the court exercises judgment, this is not appropriate in face of European law. So basically, the answer to your question is very simple. We have to remind the Commission to their responsibility to act and to move forward with the cases and to protect our European money against theft, against misuse, and against political favoritism that well, I have a feeling that if it continues like that, these malpractices, it really puts the stability of the whole European Union in danger. And we just cannot risk that.
Yes, a strong call for action. And I think the power of the European Parliament is, I think, really to call for action, but to be tough when it calls for action and not itself be shy. And unfortunately, often the European Parliament itself is not really convinced and is stopping a call when it gets serious. So let's perhaps turn to the third issue, which is the vaccine story and sort of the contracts and why it's important to have transparency on the purchase contracts that the European Commission on behalf of the EU took to buy these vaccines and, you know, really get early deliveries and significant amounts of deliveries. And you've been very vocal arguing that such transparency is absolutely crucial in a democracy, because only when we see the contracts, we can hold those that sign the contracts to account on what went wrong. And you mentioned the dangers to the union. And I would say this is perhaps the biggest danger to the union at the moment. It is the dissatisfaction of citizens all across Europe with the vaccine procurement and the vaccine delivery strategy of the European Union. So as a citizen, I think really one wants to see what went wrong and why did it go wrong. And I think as a sort of academic, I would say the control function of civil society, of academia, of the parliament is absolutely crucial at an early phase, because only then mistakes in a democracy can be corrected. If things are not transparent, mistakes are not corrected. So can you just give us a sense, you know, why wasn't the parliament more involved and, you know, more vocal earlier on? And what can be done now? And, you know, how do you see this issue of vaccine procurement going forward?
I would argue with you a bit about the parliament not being vocal enough. My political group, Renew Europe, has been calling for the transparency of the contract since last September. The chair of the Environment and Public Health Committee, Pascal Canfin, my colleague, he has been pushing the commission on numerous occasions, holding hearings.
So why didn't commission follow your calls? I mean, if the majority was saying that.
Well, I believe that the parliament has to use its powers better. So we make a lot of calls and we make a lot of publicity. And I think many of the hearings we hosted, for instance, when we hosted the hearings with the heads of the big pharma companies, were really unique. I haven't really seen anything like that happening in other democracies. But we also have to use our powers better and be more assertive with the commission. We are still being too nice. And I have to add that for the demands of the parliament, a lot of these contracts, or at least parts of them, were made public, but with a very significant delay. So I really hope that this shows the powers of the parliament, that we can actually make improvements, we can move forward. We just have to believe that we can do that. And we have to do that because our citizens really demand to see what will they get, when they will get it, how much do they pay for it, and also to demand accountability. If something goes wrong, somebody has to take the blame. And it's not enough that the commission just muddies the waters and then tries to get out of the situation without any major sacrifices. There were major mistakes made from European money. And this involves the health of millions of European citizens.
So how do you ensure consequences? I think many citizens are wondering exactly that. I mean, there have been mistakes, but there do not seem to be any political consequences.
Well, Ursula von der Leyen said that eventually she bears the weight of all consequences. So she is the person responsible. I do hope that she makes everything in her powers to remedy this situation, because at the end, she will be accountable in the eyes of European voters for these problems that happened. And unfortunately, the EU is appearing to be weak once again. And this is a great frustration of mine, that we are a huge economic power. We are the home of 500 million citizens, and we are just not using our market power enough. We are not using our global powers well enough, and we are still being played by companies, by rival powers. And we just have to grow up to the situation that, yes, we have to act together, but we also have to act responsibly. And we have to act assertively, because otherwise we will be at the wrong end of the game for who knows how many years. And this is a good lesson to learn from, I believe.
So one of the issues that the Commission complains about is that the European Parliament was very strongly advocating for the liability to rest with the pharma companies, for the liability of health consequences of the vaccines to rest with the pharma companies. And that, in fact, did cause quite a bit of the delays. And I think in hindsight, I would certainly argue it was the wrong decision to push the liability to the pharma companies, because they cannot assume the macroeconomic liability that anyway is with the member states. And any delay is extremely costly for our economies, and the costs of delayed vaccination outweigh by far the sort of liability that one can get from the pharma companies. And as we see now with the AstraZeneca debacle and fiasco, is that even though the liability is with AstraZeneca, it's still the governments that stop, because of a very small risk of blood clots, stop the distribution of the vaccine. So at the end of the day, didn't the parliament actually push the wrong policy at the time, back in September?
I think the problem was that the commission really tried to do these deals without properly consulting the parliament. We weren't treated as a partner. We weren't involved at the early stages of the process. So yes, maybe in hindsight, some things could have been done differently, but it's quite hard to formulate a sound and proper policy without the necessary information being shared with us. So I think the problem really lies at the commission side, because we issued many, many calls to be treated as partners during this negotiation process. And I feel that the parliament's demands weren't taken seriously. So yes, maybe the commission should work more with the parliament and not just treat us sometimes as, you know, legislators who say, okay, at the end of every deal they put in front of us. So yes, there are lessons to be learned, but eventually we weren't the ones who signed the contracts. It was the commission, and they are the ones responsible for the handling of the money and also for the, loss of public trust that we see all around Europe. And it's really hard to explain, you know, even as a devoted pro-European like I am, there are some instances that it's really, really hard what to say, because some claims are legitimate. And I believe that the commission should step up their game, come forward, communicate better, because this is also something that was clearly missing. Ursula von der Leyen refused to give interviews for many, many months on this topic. She only selected a few journalists who she spoke to. And I think in a time of a crisis, a leader should go on a press tour in every member state, answering questions, even the hard ones. And she should be there to communicate and to explain the problems. And this was, I think, a huge fiasco that she didn't do that.
Some very strong and harsh words there. Let me perhaps end by asking you sort of one question. If you had one wish as regards the future of Europe, which wish would you like to be seen fulfilled?
I would like to see the Conference for the Future of Europe advancing successfully and bringing about real reforms. We really need so much, because the union cannot continue to function effectively the way it's currently structured. We need treaty change, and we need a very successful modernization of our trade policy, of our foreign policy, and but also our internal measures. I believe that in so many times we just put too much trust in governments who not necessarily want to cooperate with Europe. So Europe needs to reform itself to get ready for the challenges of the 21st century and to solve the health and financial crisis together in an ever closer union. This is what I wish for the future.
Thank you very much, Katalin. That was a very interesting interview, which I enjoyed very much. And thank you to our listeners for listening to today's podcast. Please join us for future episodes of The Sound of Economics again, and do join us also on our website on www.bruegel.org. Until next time, bye-bye.